Hey everybody, it's Shaman Sister Sin, and you're listening to the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by littleshaman.com. That's me, the Little Shaman. Today I wanted to talk to you about a big interest of mine, and that is serial killers. I have actually been researching and studying serial killers for a very long time, since I was a teenager. I'm 36 years old, so that's quite a while. And to be honest, my interest in narcissism is probably a natural outgrowth of that, considering that serial killers are psychopaths, and psychopaths are end-stage narcissists. You know, they are the worst of the worst when it comes to narcissism. The subject of today's episode of the show is whether there is a link between demonic possession and serial killers. Since time began, people have been fascinated with the darker side of humanity. Throughout history, humans have been intrigued by that which we cannot understand or explain. We bury our most primitive desires and instincts, sublimating them and repressing them. But civilized society gave birth to a new phenomenon, the serial killer. Completely contrary to the way the rest of us live our lives, serial killers exist far outside the norm. They fascinate us, committing acts that most of us cannot even conceive of and existing in a place beyond everything we can imagine. They terrify us because they embody everything we have attempted to suppress in ourselves. We look at serial killers and we want to see a monster, but we don't. We see ourselves. This simultaneously captivates and repels us, intrigues but frightens us, pushes us away, and draws us in closer. It is all the allure of the strange and all the repulsion of the familiar, the darkness in humanity. So what can science tell us about serial murder? Serial killers have been studied for decades, and science has many theories about why they fall so far outside the norm of human behavior. The prevailing theory is that serial murderers are psychopaths. Psychopaths are driven solely by their own desires. If a psychopath wants your money, he will lie, manipulate, hurt, torture, or even kill you to get it without thinking twice. This does not bother him. Nothing matters to the psychopath but what he wants. Psychopathic serial killers fall at the very far end of the narcissistic spectrum. This means they have no conscience at all, caring only for themselves and what they want. And what they want is power and control over other people. They care absolutely nothing for the suffering of others or who might get hurt in their pursuit of what they want. Psychopaths feel no remorse and no guilt. Because of that, they are infinitely dangerous. They have no, what we could call, an internal policeman to stop them from doing things that are hurtful or wrong. They have no inner voice that says, don't do that, that hurts people. Now, this can be very difficult for normal, caring people to relate to. Many, many people have been victimized by psychopaths in many ways because of that simple fact. To understand what kind of person they truly are, we can refer to what Dr. Park Dietz said regarding the mindset of the serial killer. His orgasm is more important than your life. This is the serial killer. But how does he become a serial killer? And though I do use the pronoun he throughout this entire episode, that doesn't mean women can't be serial killers. There are a few notable female serial killers. There are overwhelmingly more male serial killers, but there can be female serial killers as well. I just want to get that out of the way. There is a lot of debate about how psychopaths are created. Some say nature, such as genetics. Some say nurture, such as environment and how they're raised. The answer for most serial killers is probably a little bit of both. An abused child without the genetic or biological predisposition to psychopathy is probably not going to become a psychopath, just like being a narcissist. Similarly, a nurtured child who does have a genetic or biologic predisposition to psychopathy is probably not going to become a psychopath either. This is why two children of the same gender in the same family can receive the same treatment but grow into two totally different kinds of people. Human genetics are wild cards just like every other type of genetic. If you take a poodle and a Labrador and breed them together, some of the puppies are going to look more like poodles and some of them are going to look more like Labradors. That's just the way that it works out. So people who are on the narcissistic spectrum, which is all those people suffering from cluster B personality disorders, for example, have received what is referred to as the narcissistic wound during childhood. The narcissistic wound refers to a trauma or series of traumas that were inflicted on the child, which caused severe damage to the child's psyche, rendering them unable to regulate or experience their feelings in a normal way. If you remember from other episodes of my show, I stated that in the pathological narcissist, the wound has occurred when the ability to regulate emotions was just starting to develop, rendering them unable to feel empathy normally for other people and making the conscience ineffective in most situations. The narcissist's own feelings simply just scream over it, if it even works at all. In the psychopath, the narcissistic wound has occurred before these feelings even began to form a lot of the time. They have no real feelings to regulate, and consequently, they have no conscience. They are just an empty vessel, a machine looking for distraction and fulfillment. Narcissists who are further down on the scale towards psychopathy are the same. All serial killers are psychopaths, but not all psychopaths are serial killers. However, a child who becomes a psychopath has a much higher likelihood of becoming a serial killer if he's learned to connect violence and sexual excitement. Now, this usually would occur during puberty, but it can happen much earlier. Let's say that there's a 13-year-old boy who has become a psychopath. No one knows he's a psychopath yet, although he is, and there are definitely warning signs. They usually refer to this as the serial killer triad, and the behaviors in that are bedwetting, setting fires, and cruelty to animals. This boy feels very powerless in his own life because his father beats him and controls him, and his mother, who he would generally see as very powerful, ignores and berates him. This makes the boy angry, and he wants to feel powerful too. However, he's small and weak. He can never dominate his father or his mother, the people he really wants to dominate. He's been taught very early and very well that the way you become strong is to dominate and hurt things weaker than yourself. After all, look how strong his parents are. He looks around for something smaller than him. He finds a cat, and hurting the cat makes him feel better. The boy has all the power in that situation. He delights in how this power makes him feel. He feels strong because the cat cannot defend itself. It's weak compared to the boy. The cat's suffering does not bother him. If he even notices it at all, it's considered academic and not important. If he does notice it, it's probably because it only excites him more. This is how sadists are created too, by the way. Because his heart is pounding and because he's in puberty, the boy becomes excited while he's hurting the cat or later when he's thinking about hurting the cat. He notices the excitement. Maybe he does something about the excitement, like masturbate, or maybe he doesn't, but the link has already been forged. Over time, this will be repeated many times until what has been created is a person who becomes sexually excited by hurting and having power over another living thing, a serial killer. Now, that's all well and good, but what about the serial killers that science can't explain? This is where we start talking about serial murderers and demonic possession. Science and psychology do a very good job of explaining the phenomenon of serial murder, but what about the murderers who don't have a reason to be what they are? Though there are a few serial killers we could examine for this episode of the show, we're going to look at two to keep it a little shorter, and those two are Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy. Let's examine Jeffrey Dahmer first. Dahmer's case is very well known, and I have mentioned him in other podcasts. Dahmer drugged, tortured, killed, and cannibalized 17 young men between 78 and 91. He was also a necrophile. He was not a necrophile by choice, however. If he had his choice, he stated he would rather have a living person who just had no will of their own at all, like a zombie, that he could have sex with. He was not able to create that or find that, and so the next best thing for him was a dead body that he could just completely control. We've all heard about the drilling technique and Dahmer trying to obliterate the frontal lobe in people's brains. That is what he was trying to do. He was trying to create these sex zombies. Now, on the surface, Dahmer's case seems pretty similar to many other serial killers. But is it? It doesn't appear to be upon deeper investigation. Dahmer did not have a traumatic childhood. Not really, not compared to other serial killers. He had a basically normal family and no greater or fewer traumatic events than anybody else. He certainly had far fewer than most serial murderers generally have, such as compared to Gacy or Armin Meiwes. So why did he become a serial killer? No one really knows. Dahmer himself did not even know, and this is somewhat uncommon among serial killers. Most of them do understand why they are the way that they are, at least to a point. Dahmer could not come up with any reason at all. It was, in fact, the subject of great confusion for him, and he talked about it often. He even donated his brain to science in the hopes that something would be discovered by examining it, but unfortunately nothing was. His brain was not abnormal in any way. It's less well known, however, that Dahmer had a large interest in the occult going back to when he was a teenager. There was apparently a seance when he was a teenager where Dahmer talked about wanting to contact, quote, an evil spirit that was harassing him and telling him to do things that he didn't want to do. He also announced his intention to contact Lucifer to friends that attended the seance with him. Dahmer killed animals and dismembered them, as nearly all budding serial killers do. However, unlike most serial killers, these dead animals were found in odd poses or with their heads placed on sticks. As Dahmer got older, his chosen victims became people, and the more murders Dahmer committed, the more obsessed with the occult he actually became. He was obsessed with the ultimate power and control of the Emperor character from Star Wars and with the movie The Exorcist 3. His sole surviving victim, Tracy Edwards, testified that Dahmer was watching The Exorcist 3 during the attack, which at that time was an established ritual for Dahmer, and Mr. Edwards stated that he observed Dahmer rocking back and forth while chanting off and on during the entire time Edwards was in Dahmer's apartment. Edwards described a part during the movie when a preacher becomes possessed as a segment that, quote, really had Dahmer's attention. He stated that when Dahmer told him to lie face down and be handcuffed, he did not comply, saying, "I guess God told me not to let this person handcuff me, so I didn't." Edwards further described a change in Dahmer once the attack began, even stating that Dahmer actually looked different. Edwards was able to escape because Dahmer, engaged in one of those chanting episodes, was not paying attention. "It's like I wasn't there anymore," was how he described it. Edwards actually likened Dahmer to the devil a few times in his statements to police, and Mr. Edwards' testimony is available for viewing on YouTube. I'll put a link to that in the information for this video. His testimony starts at about 1 hour and 2 minutes into the video. Dahmer also had plans drawn up to construct an altar of sorts using the skulls and bones from his victims, and I will include a link to an article where you can see the picture that he drew of the altar. He was already beginning to build it when he was caught. According to an interview he did with Robert Ressler, a man I admire and respect very much, his intention was to use this altar to, quote, tap into something that would bring him success and power. Dahmer was actually kind of vague about the altar, but it's unclear whether this was because he didn't want to talk about it or because he just wasn't sure. Considering how open he was about everything, it's not likely he didn't want to talk about it. That leaves the possibility that he just wasn't sure. That raises questions. Why would he be unsure about the purpose of something he himself is building? Where did he get the idea for it if he could not even really be positive about what it was for? What was the actual purpose of the altar? It would be easy to dismiss these questions and the altar itself as just craziness from a crazy guy, except that Dahmer wasn't crazy. In fact, he really wasn't even close. He was suffering from borderline personality disorder, as many killers of all types do, and probably narcissistic personality disorder, but he was not crazy. What he was empty. And perhaps when there is an empty space, anything that can fill it will do so, especially if the empty vessel is weak. Dahmer talked about feeling controlled by his desires and being unable to fight them. He was also a raging alcoholic. That's another thing that sets Dahmer apart from other serial killers, the fact that he fought his urges. Most of them don't. On the contrary, they revel in their urges. Dahmer was different in that regard. He didn't understand his compulsions or where they came from, and he did try to fight them. He, in fact, describes a two-year period where he was able to abstain from any behavior at all by going to church, of all things. This did not last long, though. It seems that once he gave in to these base urges again after this two-year stint, he no longer attempted to fight his urges at all. He claimed that he felt driven to kill, but was too weak to resist because of his alcoholism. He surrendered, basically. Indeed, he plunged in with a vengeance and escalated back up to murder in a very short period of time. Now, there is a supposed 9-year gap between his first and second murder, but many people don't believe that that's the truth, especially considering that he was overseas serving in the military for 2 years after his first murder. Like other serial murderers who lack an obvious cause, such as Bundy, Mullen, Rader, and Ridgway, Dahmer's body count is relatively high. He also started killing at 18, which is a remarkably young age for serial killers. Most of them are between 35 and 45 years old. His first murder apparently took place less than a month after the séance that he attended. Perhaps the thing that stands out the most regarding Dahmer is the truly unbelievable number of times he should have been caught but wasn't. He had numerous involvements with the police. There were times they were in his apartment when he had dead bodies dismembered in the bathroom or the bedroom, and still he was not caught. Dahmer himself expressed amazement over this. The police even returned an escaped teenage victim to him, and he killed that boy as soon as they left. It's as if he had the luck of the devil himself. And maybe he did. It should be noted that Dahmer actually stated that every day he lived was a, quote, affront to God, and that he was killed in prison by Christopher Scarver, a man who claimed the voice of God told him who to kill. Now, examining Bundy, we see that, like Dahmer, Bundy had a basically normal childhood. He did find out that his mother was actually his grandmother, not his true mother. But by all accounts, Ted's childhood does not appear to have been the type that creates a serial murderer. There is some speculation that the grandfather, who he would have thought was his father, was abusive, but there has never been any proof of that. And there is a story that a female member of Ted's family tells of waking up in the middle of the night surrounded by knives in her bed. And she claimed that 3-year-old Ted was in the room, that he was the one that had put them there. So by all accounts, Ted's childhood was basically normal, yet he killed 36 women. He has one of the highest body counts of any American serial killer. Not only, in fact, did he kill them, but he brutalized them both before and after death, just as Dahmer did to his victims. But why? Again, no one knows. Ted did not know. At the end of his life, when he finally began confessing, he stated that the compulsion to kill had taken over his entire life and that he was unable to stop. He claimed he was unable to sleep or eat because he was so driven to find a victim. Only after he killed could he find any measure of peace for any length of time. It makes you wonder also if this is why Dahmer drank so much, to find some peace. He did say he was, in his words, searching for oblivion. But what is it that compelled these men so strongly, even to the point of exhaustion, where they couldn't do or think about anything else? Links from Ted Bundy to the occult are tenuous, really. There really isn't much to find. However, most of the rest of his story is the same as Dahmer's, and as secretive as Ted was, if he did have any interest or experience with the occult, it's unlikely anybody would have ever known. Like Dahmer, Bundy also had the luck of the devil, truly. He was implicated in the disappearances of women very early on, but nothing ever came of it. They had a sketch of him. They even had his name. He was eventually caught and arrested, but he escaped from jail twice. During the times he was free, he continued to kill, just as Dahmer did after his many brushes with the law. Even when faced with immediate peril, they were unable to stop killing. Even with bodies literally piled up on top of each other and nowhere to put more, they were unable to stop. Both of these men claimed to be driven to kill by forces beyond their control and seemingly had extraordinary luck and success with killing, walking away even with victims in broad daylight but arousing almost no suspicion. Ted Bundy even killed 2 people in one day. Indeed, witnesses who did see them couldn't remember or agree on what they looked like. It's almost as if there was a cloak over them, obscuring them from the witness's memory. They operated almost totally under the radar. Even when authorities were alerted to their presence, they were essentially ignored. Complicating matters more is that both Dahmer and Bundy were chameleons physically. By changing something very small about themselves, or even sometimes seemingly at will, they could look like someone totally different. As you can see from this picture of Ted Bundy, this is all the same guy. These are all the same guy. It's pretty amazing. So, what's the conclusion? When we take a hard look at Dahmer and Bundy, we see that though they may appear to fall under the same category as, quote, regular serial killers, they don't. There are significant differences between these men and what we could call the garden variety serial killer. It has been posited many times that perhaps the reason these killers were so successful is because they had an accomplice. This is, of course, possible, but what accomplice was it who made the police turn Dahmer's teenage victim back over to him to be murdered? What accomplice helped Bundy escape incarceration not just once but twice? Not a human accomplice, that much is for sure. In the end, it's impossible to determine whether either of these men were vessels for something supernatural. However, the argument can be made for the possibility of it, and it has been made here. If science and psychology cannot explain these men, what does? I hope you found that thought-provoking, maybe cleared up some things for you. As always, I look forward to your comments, stories, and suggestions. You've been listening to the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by LittleShaman.com. That's me, the Little Shaman. May the Great Spirit bless you and have a wonderful day.